Now, there have been calls for more to be done to deal with online abuse after the DUP leader Arlene Foster and her party colleague Carla Lockhart were targeted by online trolls in a series of vicious attacks over their appearance at the weekend. The deputy leader of the DUP, Nigel Dodds, called for steps to be taken to end, quote, the Wild West culture of anything goes on some social media platforms. A listener has contacted us over abusive posts about Sinn Féin MEP Martina Anderson that appeared on the DUP South Down Facebook page. They have since been removed. Earlier, I spoke to the Alliance leader, Naomi Long, and asked for her views on online abuse.
Well, I think, Stephen, that this is a problem that's been ongoing for some time. I think most of us in public life are aware that it happens, but there is a particular strain of abuse that I think is dished out to women in public life and that is persistent about how they look, about their appearance, very personal comments that are designed, really, I think, to put women off actually using the platform at all. And I think it's important that, first of all, those of us in politics don't engage in that. I think that's the most important thing. And I also think it's important that we speak out when we see it, regardless of who is on the receiving end, regardless of their politics. I think we need to speak out and say it's unacceptable because we need to send clear messages to the people who support us and who agree with our position that, yes, it's okay to have robust exchange on Twitter. Yes, it's okay to have an argument about politics, but it should never come down to mocking how someone looks or insulting their appearance, because that's not what politics is about.
Why do you say this is mostly aimed at women? Look, I get it every day. I know of many other men who get it, and I'm not saying it's acceptable, but is this not part and parcel of what happens on the internet to men and women?
Well, first of all, I acknowledge that it does happen to everyone, but it has a particular resonance with women because for so long women have been judged more on their appearance than the substance of what they say. And it is another way of demeaning and degrading what women are saying in public life. And I know from talking to younger women, for example, who would like to get involved in politics, that the threat of being mocked for how they look or having their appearance criticised is something that often causes them to have second thoughts about getting engaged in politics. So, yes, it does happen to everybody, Stephen, and I think it's always wrong. So I think if we see it happening to other people, whether they're male or female, we should say it's unacceptable. But I think it has a particularly sharp edge when it's used against women because, as I say, in society for so long, women have been more judged for their appearance than for the substance of what they do. And I think that that is part of the process of trying to stop women engaging, stop women speaking out and undermine what they have to say.
What type of abuse, for example, do you get?
Well, I mean, I get all kinds of abuse. I mean, it goes from the ridiculous right through to the quite threatening.
Can you give us examples?
I get the full range, Stephen. I'm criticised because of my ginger hair, which is, to me, that just glances off me. I've been getting that since I was a kid, and it's most of the time, it's not going to hit home. I get criticised because of my weight. I get criticised because of my appearance generally. I get criticised because of what I wear. I get criticised. I just constantly get abuse for that. And some of it is pretty unpleasant stuff.
And does it get to you? Does it have an effect? I know you will want to say, no, it doesn't, but does it?
No, I mean, to be honest, no, it really doesn't, because when you're dealing with people, I mean, first of all, I've been in politics for a long time. I've been in elected politics now for 17 years. And I think by now I have a very strong resistance to that kind of thing. So it does glance off. I know the reason people do it. I understand what is behind it. And so from that perspective, no, it doesn't really get to me. But I still think it's wrong, and I know that it does get to other people, and that's what concerns me. We shouldn't have to, as public figures, grow a thicker skin or get over ourselves and those sorts of things. It's it's not acceptable behaviour, and I think we should be able to say publicly that it's wrong. We should be able, I think, to defend other politicians. I mean, when I saw what was said at the weekend about Arlene and Carla, I called it out and said to the people who were involved that I thought it was disgraceful, and that if they had a problem with Arlene or Carla's politics, to raise the politics, because that's what they're in the public eye for. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, Stephen, I didn't get involved in politics because of how I looked. I'm not a model. That's not what I went into politics to be, or I'm in the public eye for. I'm here because of what I think. And if people want to criticise my opinions and what I think, that's valid. And that's fine, and they're free to do it. But what I look like is irrelevant in many ways. And I think increasingly that is something that people target in order to try to put people off. And I mean, I know Carla well enough to know that it won't stop her, it won't stop me. But it's often, first of all, very difficult for our families and our friends to read it. And the other thing about it that I think that really matters is that for younger people thinking about coming into politics or getting involved in public life, it does put them off doing that.
Can I ask a question? So I'm very much, and you'll understand why I'm saying this.
Sure.
So I'm separating the trolling discussion we've just had with my next question, because they're completely separate. It's totally unacceptable to be trolling people about their appearance, full stop. But you just said there your appearance and anyone's appearance is irrelevant in politics. So very quick, separate discussion. Do you actually think that's true? You know, and if I bring that in for myself as well, you know, is appearance irrelevant to me as a television presenter? Because, you know, people will talk about my weight and how dishevelled I am. All. Do you think appearance in this modern world of communication is irrelevant?
Yeah, I think it should be.
But is it? Of course,
well,
it should
okay.
be, but is
it? Does it affect how people will respond to you? It may well do, Stephen. And I mean, obviously, there will be other people who will, you know, do the psychology of it. But what I'm saying very clearly is that, yes, there is a responsibility on us, I suppose, to look presentable, if you want to put it that way. So, I mean, if I rock up to your television show in my pyjamas, it suggests a degree of disrespect to the audience, and that's something that would be wrong for me to do.
Let me spit it out. When you're on television, are you conscious about your weight, or do you not care? I am. I'm just wondering if you are.
No, I mean, I think that part of the reason that people use it to attack is in the hope that it will sensitise you to that issue and then will make you conscious of it and then make you not want to do it. So, of course, I'm conscious of how I look. I sit in makeup, as you do, before I go on. And you have to look at yourself in a mirror before you go on. You know people are going to look at you. So you're conscious that people are going to be looking at you and judging you. But I would hope, and 9 times out of 10, I have to say it's the case, that when people are commenting on what happens when I'm on television, it is based on what I say.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, I'm not there to decorate the studio. I'm not there for people's admiring glance. That's not the purpose of why I'm there. I'm there to discuss issues of substance. I'm there to engage with people. And of course, people will reach conclusions about my appearance. I mean, I used to joke about it, where I used to have really long discussions on television, and someone would then send me a message and say, oh, I saw you on television, it was great. And I said to them, what was it about? You know, because I couldn't remember which thing it was.
Yeah.
And they'd say, oh, I don't know, you were wearing a blue jumper, or you were wearing a, you know, people would, because it's a visual medium, so people will remember what you were wearing and things like that. And that's okay. And I get benefit, I have to say, and always have done, from the fact that as a redhead, I stand out from the crowd. So, you know, there are benefits visually also to having a striking appearance, whatever that might be. But at the end of the day, I think we need to be very clear in terms of what we do, that we're sending a consistent message as politicians that this is not what we're about. This is not why we're in the job we're in. that we're there for the value of our ideas and our opinions, okay. and we need to refocus the debate on that. And Stephen, you know, you get a lot of criticism online. I see that too. I think that's wrong. I think that's bullying behaviour, and the idea behind it is to try to make you conscious and self-conscious. That's not acceptable. No. What we need to do is focus on, are you a good interviewer or not? That's a fine debate to be having online. And people will have that too. Now, but that's a different debate, and that's a valid one.
Now we will have to leave it there, but thank you very much indeed. So the blogger Jimmy Bryson, listening to this today, along with Spiked Online legal editor Luke Gitos. Luke, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Bryson, good morning to you.
Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, good morning. Wait, look, the trolling aspect of all of this, yes, we will get into. I actually think there's a more interesting discussion, Luke, if we start with you, about what Naomi was saying there, which is, look, appearance shouldn't matter and doesn't matter. Appearance drives a lot of what we do in life, whether we appear well or not. It does matter. Is that not the reality, Luke? Whether it should or shouldn't, it does matter.
Well, I think it does. I think it's regrettable that it does. I think people should be judged on their ideas and what they say. And obviously, in particular contexts, appearances can matter more than others. You know, in a formal context, if I came into work dressed in shorts and a T-shirt at the law firm where I work, then people would judge me on that basis because it says something about how I present myself. But in the public sphere, people should be able to express their ideas without fear of being dismissed for how they look. I think that's perfectly legitimate. And I think one thing, if we're going to come back to the trolling discussion, that it illustrates the kind of culture where cheap insults have become elevated to a level that is treated too seriously by both sides. It's treated too seriously by those who are responding to them, by trying to get the police involved and having people locked up. And it's taken too seriously by those, and it's arguably not taken seriously enough by those who choose to log on to Twitter and spend their time having abusive celebrities. Neither side is right in this discussion. Yeah. What we need is a more robust public sphere where people are judged on what they say and not how they look.
It was only last year, Jimmy, that someone, it seemed effortlessly, said online that they wanted to give me a hole in the head. In other words, they wanted to shoot me in the head, right? This was just last year. Do you not think that the internet has got into such a stage of the Wild West that it needs control somehow? The abuse that there is on Twitter is just vicious at times.
Well, it absolutely is. And I think I was on your programme, I think Benny was doing it not so long ago, after somebody had went online to hurl the most vile abuse at my two-year-old son. And I had said at that point in time, you know, I think platforms like Twitter should require people to have a valid form of ID to sign up, because what we have is people using anonymous accounts to hurl abuse. Some people not using anonymous accounts. You know, if you look at my Twitter, there are people who literally, and this is not an exaggeration, tweet me 15 or 20 times a day. And these aren't anonymous accounts. These are just people tweeting abuse constantly, constantly, constantly. And we also have sites, you know, here in Northern Ireland. Let me give you an example. And this is where I think some of our politicians and some of the journalists and other people need to have a look and a think about this, because the sites such as the LAD site, which we will all know, which is run by anonymous people, nobody knows who that is, and that engages in continuous mocking of people and abusing of people. And quite often, many prominent journalists, many prominent political parties are never done retweeting that, sharing that, and giving credence to that. So if we're going to end online abuse, well, let's be clear about that. Across the board, there's also, of course, an element.
There's also a fine line, isn't there, between saying something is unacceptable and censorship?
Well, yes, it is, Stephen. But let me put it to you like this: in that particular type of situation, we have people who are effectively, in real world terms, wearing a mask. They're anonymized. They're wearing a mask, and then they get together with 30 or 40 people on the internet, and they target and they attack somebody. Now, if 30 or 40 people got together in the street, put a mask on and chased somebody down the street and started abusing them, it would be absolutely appalling. But yet, when people do that online, it's absolutely fine. 30 or 40 people can get together, hurl abuse and shout at somebody, and that's totally acceptable. That would not be acceptable in the real world. So why is it acceptable within this virtual world? And I have to make this point, and I'm not only saying this because you're here, because I made this point very strongly at the time. A number of political parties, in my view, engaged and whipped up the whole Boycott Nolan campaign to target you, and encourage that, and encourage trolls and social media accounts to spread that and go after you as an individual, go after your integrity as a journalist. And a number of politicians were more than happy to engage in that. So if we're going to call it out, let's call it out across the board, because it's not right.
Well,
it's
not right. Well,
Nobody should have to endure that abuse.
Well, the bottom line is this. When you've got whatever it is, and I would need to look at the figures, but when you've got something, what is it, over 300,000 people across a week listening to the Nolan Show, if someone wants
well,
to...
Well, it didn't work. Yes, the boycott didn't work,
you know what I mean?
Clearly.
I noticed during that boycott campaign, by the way, that we had more calls, or as many calls, certainly, as ever before. I noticed that some of the people who were openly tweeting about the Boycott Nolan campaign were then talking every day about what we had on the air. And all I would say, and I don't want to make this discussion about the Nolan Show, it shouldn't
but
be,
I got it up.
But all I would say is... when you have that volume of support and buy-in from the public, you know, over 300,000, what is that? Nearly a fifth of the of everybody who lives in Northern Ireland would hear the Nolan Show across a week. Work away. It ain't going to work. Let's come back to the discussion now that we have, Luke Geddos. Jamie makes a fair point, does he not, that if you physically gave out this abuse in the street, you would be arrested and somehow you get away with it online.
No, this is where I think this discussion becomes completely hysterical, because there is an obvious difference between chasing someone down the street in a mask and tweeting someone an offensive remark. In the one circumstance, you have an understandable fear that your safety or even your life might be in danger, i.e. when it happens in the real world. When someone tweets you a stupid remark, you should have the sense to recognise that firing off a tweet is very easily done. They do it to get a reaction. They often, although not always, they will often do it anonymously, which means that they're not even willing to stand by what they're saying. The two situations are completely and utterly different. And the most obvious difference is, you know, in the online example, you can deal with it in the way that I've dealt with all my apparent Twitter abuse.
I'm going to interrupt you, Luke, just for 1 second. Sorry to do so. I'm just noticing dropping on the wires here. Arsene Wenger, the manager of Arsenal, isn't going to be the manager for much longer. He's just issued the following statement. After careful consideration and following discussions with the club, I feel it is the right time for me to step down at the end of the season. I'm grateful for having had the privilege to serve the club for so many memorable years. I manage the club with full commitment and integrity. I want to thank the staff, the players, the directors and the fans who make this club so special. I urge our fans to stand behind the team to finish on a high. To all the Arsenal lovers, take care of the values of the club. My love and support forever, Arsene Wenger. So, breaking news this morning, Arsene Wenger is out at the end of the season. Sorry, Luke, carry on.
That's all right. There is a very clear difference between online and offline behaviour, because you can ignore online behaviour. I logged on to my Twitter for the first time in about 2 weeks the other day, and I saw that there was scores of insults and abuse being thrown around. But I didn't notice it. It didn't bother me because I was living a life in the real world.
Yeah,
I think
the point is it didn't bother you, but it does bother and intimidate and scare and upset some people.
Well, in that case, don't use Twitter. I mean, it really is that
really?
Easy. And I think, I really think that. A lot of people get by without using it. It's a very small portion of the country that uses Twitter. And if you're a politician or public figure, believe it or not, you can get by actually engaging in the real world and not living your whole life staring at your mobile phone.
Look, let's follow through in the logic of what you just said, that people should self-censor, as it were, and take themselves off Twitter. If you go into a bar and somebody starts abusing you across the bar and shouting and hurling abuse at you, maybe a football match is on, you're a Manchester United fan, you go in to watch the game, and a Liverpool fan starts shouting vile, horrible abuse in your face, would you expect the door supervisors to put that individual out, or would you leave the bar and not come back?
You know, I've just explained what the difference is.
In a vacuum. No. You're trying to say that social media is a vacuum. There are many people... Now, people control the likes of me all day. I don't care. I put myself out there. But there are people who don't put themselves out there. They're just engaging in social media to do just that, to just engage in social media. And they then end up getting abused.
Okay, final word from you, Luke.
If that abuse happens and it bothers you, then you shouldn't be on Twitter. It really is that easy. And I think the difference between being in a bar and being on Twitter is absolutely clear. And removing yourself from Twitter is not self-censorship. There are tons of available platforms for people to express themselves and to engage. And I think if you're on Twitter, you have to accept that part of it is a bunch of losers dressing themselves up in anonymous accounts to throw abuse at people. That is part of the nature of the beast. And if you can't deal with it, then get off it.
Luke, thank you very much. We'll say good morning to you, Luke. Thank you, Jimmy Bryson. Before you go this morning, we should really get your reaction to what we were talking about at the top of the show today, of this report by Dr. Paul Nolan, who said it's likely Catholics will outnumber Protestants by 2021. Also, that statistic, the difference is even more marked among school children, where 51% are Catholic, 37% Protestant.
No, I'm not, because what that does is that creates a scenario where your political allegiance is shaped in relation to your religious background. So the notion that every single Catholic is a nationalist is just nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. There are many Catholic Unionists, so to equate... Yeah,
but equally it's on the Protestant side, isn't it? It's nonsense on the Protestant side.
Yeah, look, to suggest that every Protestant is a Unionist and every Catholic is a nationalist is a nonsense.
But Ireland is being talked about as being a possibility more now than ever before, is it not?
I'm glad we're calling it a United Ireland, because I've heard in the last couple of days on numerous platforms that we somehow have started calling it a New Ireland, in some kind of linguistic ploy to dress up what it actually is. United Ireland, United Ireland. It's the ultimate goal of nationalism. So trying to dress it up in the terms of a new Ireland and nice woolly language is an absolute nonsense. And I think we need to stop doing that. And I think the media generally need to stop feeding that.
Yeah, but do you ever contemplate the scenario of a, call it whatever you want, United Ireland, New Ireland, whatever. Do you ever contemplate Senator Jimmy Bryson, Fianna Fáil, or anything like it?
No, I don't. And actually, and you will find this strange to say, but respect to the man for somebody that I've disagreed with, but I thought Peter Robinson's answer to that same question on your show last week was absolutely correct. You know, why would we start talking about hypothetical questions? There's not going to be a United Ireland. It's not going to happen. It's a lot of people jumping up and down.
Arlene Foster said she would leave the country if there were to be a United Ireland. Would you?
Well, as I said, I go back to what Peter Robinson said, and he was quite correct.
Be your own man, for goodness sake, and answer the question.
Well, let me say this. I would not live in a United Ireland, and I would not think that I would be welcome in a United Ireland. And if you look at how unionism has been treated I will not cast all of nationalism in this, but by the Republican community, by Sinn Féin, there would be no place in a United Ireland for the likes of me, unless I was compliant and unless I agreed to the New Ireland agenda. And if I did not, I would be a problem, because you have to remember the whole.
We've got to go to the news, Jimmy. Okay. Sorry, we've run out of time, but thank you very much indeed. Thank you.